Thank you for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hanson in for John Williams. And everyone was kind of circling today's date on the calendar as like the next big piece of government data. And we got it. It's the jobs report. Jane Oates is the senior policy advisor, recent president for WorkingNation.com. Jane, hello. Welcome to the program again.
Thank you so much. Always great to be back on this program.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that. We added 272,000 jobs. That beat ADP number, the private payroll number on Wednesday, beat most speculation. Can you just explain how we add 272,000 jobs, yet the unemployment number ticks up a little bit? I know that confuses, well, me and some other people, too.
Well, it is confusing, right? And usually the good news is that more people entered the workforce. This time it doesn't quite look like that. I mean, what the number's telling us, economy's still strong, but it is starting to cool off a little bit. I mean, in the JOLTS numbers earlier in the month told us that there's only 8.1 million open jobs. And quite frankly, you know, that's a great number, except it's down almost 2 million from its high a year ago.
Well, then it's just hard to figure out exactly what's going on, right? Is this a matter of, yes,
right,
people are losing jobs through the organic layoffs that sometimes happen, or just there's still some churn happening, but that most people are still able to find one if they want one? Is that the best way to interpret this?
You know, I think that's right. I think what people around their kitchen tables right now are saying, well, I've been sending out resumes and I haven't gotten anything. So, you know, they really need to rethink their searching. I mean, sometimes you go after one sector, and we've seen a couple sectors really be strong for the last year. I mean, everybody was probably saying out loud as they're listening to their radio, whether they're driving or sitting at home, healthcare. That's exactly right. Healthcare has been incredibly strong this month, adding another 68,000 jobs. But, you know, government and leisure and hospitality really made big gains this week. So if you haven't looked, you know, in healthcare, if you haven't looked in government and you haven't looked at leisure and hospitality, because you remember how devastating those numbers were and how, you know, that sector really took a hit during COVID, start looking at it again.
This is one of those days where the people who say, well, the job number comes out, but the revisions are always downward. There were some downward revisions to the previous months. The way it happens is they release it for the month, then they revise the numbers as they go on. But I don't want to feed into some conspiracy theory, Jane, because just 2 months ago, the revisions were upward and upward by a lot. I mean, there's just revisions all the time. There is no one-sided political angle to this.
Yeah, this is all human error, right? I mean, businesses send these numbers in and they make mistakes. You know, they double count things, they undercount things. So these revisions have been a part of the BLS process since the beginning of it. And, you know, having been in government, I have to say, BLS is one of the most removed entities from politics. Like, they are just, I hope they excuse me for saying this, they're nerds. All they care about, you know, is the data and the quality of that data. They don't care who's president. They don't care who's governor or mayor. Nothing bothers them except the quality of the data.
Yeah. If you work for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I'm sorry, you are probably a nerd. Lovingly. And I'm so sorry. No, I agree. And we appreciate the work that they do. It's got to be somewhat of a Herculean task. Jane, I don't know if you've dove into this, but I've read articles, too, about how much harder it's getting to get businesses, small businesses, to even report their job numbers because, like all of us, we ignore calls, we don't like spam, we don't pay attention to snail mail. The BLS has to work even harder to get the data that they get these days.
That's right. And they really do try to represent all different types of businesses. And I'm so glad you brought up small business because people don't understand, you know, if you're a small business owner, you are literally doing 20 jobs on the average day. And there aren't many average days. You know, you're trying to keep your company afloat. And please keep doing that. We want all these small businesses not only to keep afloat, but to thrive and grow.
One number that you kind of alluded to when talking about whether more people are working or not is this participation rate. Sometimes the headline jobs number is what might move the market initially. But I feel like on second look, as people are trying to gauge the health of an economy, boy, that's the number I hear people talking about a lot. What does it mean and where is it at this month?
So it hasn't moved. It has been persistently stuck at what I think is a dangerously low number, 62%. And what it means is they look at the people who are actually working and looking and actively looking and count that as the participation rate. It's just like, you know, when you were in fourth grade, you're making a fraction. The number of people looking over the number of total people in the pot. We really, as a country, should be striving to get that number up closer to 65%. We need all the talent we can get to really make the kind of economy long-term that we want. And, you know, this is me, not data, saying this. I think there's still a lot of people sitting on the sidelines, whether it's because of their gender or their race or their age. They think there's not a place in this economy for them. And I just want them to really believe there is a quality job out there for each and every one of them. Come back in, start looking.
Or childcare costs so much it doesn't make sense for families. John Hansen, hosting the Wintrust Business Lunch, joined by Jane Oates, Senior Policy Advisor, recent president for WorkingNation.com. We're going over the jobs report number that we got today. We got a good text here, Jane. I hope you could maybe shed some light on it. The 262 was just kind of curious. I read that the government adds about 60,000 new jobs in a month. I don't know if that's what it was this month, but they're wondering, I hope this isn't political to puff up a number. We were talking about the politics of the job number, people sometimes questioning the statistics. I think this is a genuine question whether government hiring is like some effort to puff up the job numbers. Your thoughts?
Well, most of the government hiring for the job increases for the past several months have been at the local government level. So if you think what that really means, it's maybe some districts hiring teachers. It's maybe people hiring police and fire, people that actually work in City Hall, or it could even be a bridge between healthcare and government because it could be community health workers. It's very rare that these numbers that come up are federal, even though, you know, federal jobs are all over the country. People think of them as in D.C. You know, 65% of federal jobs are outside of the DMV. So, but it's very rarely them adding the jobs. It's really local and state government adding. And as I said, for the past several months, it's really been local government hiring.
Okay. That participation rate stuck at 62.5%. You were talking about some groups of our country that are maybe on the sidelines. I mentioned child care as a reason, maybe for young moms or dads who stay home. One spouse stays home with the kids to make that make sense. Who else is staying on the sidelines?
You know, I think, and Working Nation talks about this a lot, the real trials of older workers. And I'm not talking about 80-year-olds here, although God bless them if they're still working at 80. But people, when they hit 50, if they have, if they get laid off, they really are having a hard time finding other jobs that are at the same level they were or at a better level. And that only increases really every year after 50. So those older workers really do face some bias, and they are on the sidelines way too often. You mentioned women and childcare. Absolutely. I mean, women made back many of the losses they had during COVID because of that childcare issue. But the reality is about 30% of childcare entities across the nation never reopened after COVID. So we have an incredible shortage. Employers need to figure out, you know, creative ways, either offering childcare on their work site, pairing with an existing child care. They need to figure out ways because we need to get those women and men, you know, a lot of stay-at-home dads now too, figuring out who makes more money. But as, you know, as the economy moves forward, these folks want to come back as their kids are in school and there's good after-school programs. We want to get them back into the workforce. And finally, John, I would just say, I can't ever talk about employment without talking about young workers. You know, young workers, whether they're coming right out of high school or out of a 2 or 4 year degree program, really are facing some challenges in getting a job in their professional area of study. So if you're an employer that's listening, hire a young person today as well.
How about someone with different abilities too?
Oh, well, you know, that's the really piece of good news. I'm so glad you brought that up because this is the topic that Working Nation has been focusing on too. You know, the crisis of employment within the disability community is unbelievable. But we have seen real increases this past year. I mean, they have made incredible strides. They now have a 25% participation rate, which sounds really crazy, except it has gone up. It was in the high teens forever.
Whoa.
So you know, these are people that were either born with a disability or became disabled as an adult, you know, and it could happen to anyone. So, again, the fact that employers are really looking differently at talent and looking in different talent pools, it's been the one upside, you know, of this war on talent. They're really searching for talent in different places. And people with diverse abilities have really benefited from that, thank God.
Maybe that's a positive byproduct of what was a labor shortage, forcing employers to think a little bit differently, maybe consider people that they hadn't before and really should, and just the end of, or the lessening of the stigma around some of these things.
Boy, that's such a great point, John, and I'm so glad you brought it up because, again, any parent who has a child with a disability or anyone who was an active member in the workforce and then something happened, a mobility issue, a sight issue, a hearing issue, they're still the same amazing person they always were, and too often they feel like they're not welcomed back to get into the workforce.
Yeah, for sure. What role does immigration play in this, Jane? If we can't get this participation rate up to where we need it to be, and we still witness labor shortages, although we may see some cooling, of course, immigration does play a key role in the growth of this country and from a jobs perspective.
Absolutely. We are a nation of immigrants, all of us, except our Native American sisters and brothers. But the bottom line is, the one way we have been able to innovate more, to work harder, to produce more, is to rely on immigrants. So I'm hoping that as a country, you know, we not only look and engage our visa programs, but we also look at better pathways for people to come in and bring their talents from other places and become citizens.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. Legal immigration, of course, is the preferred method, and business owners on both sides of the political spectrum have been screaming for immigration reform. Politicians on both sides of the aisle have been screaming for it for decades, and neither party has gotten it done, and both parties have stifled it at times. So I'm going to leave that there, Jane, and not have you comment on that, and instead focus on what is good news, I think, to our pockets, but may not be great news, broadly speaking, an increase in wages above expectations. Can you square that circle for me, Jane?
Yeah, you know, I think when you hear that wages went up 14 cents, you know, you're like, what is that? Like, what can I buy with 14 cents an hour? You know what I mean? But the reality is, wages in this country were stagnant for years. And this year-over-year increase of a little over 4% is really good news. It's going to get better when the inflation number goes down, when gas prices and food prices and rent prices go down. Let's hope they do. But I think it's really positive. I mean, that and the fact that hours didn't go down. You know, even though we saw a dismal performance, unfortunately, in manufacturing, we didn't add the number of jobs that we'd like. We saw that hours worked in manufacturing are over 40 hours and that overtime was up. That's good for working families, right? That's good news. So I'm happy to see that increase. Would I like it to be higher? Absolutely. But I'm more positive because it's been a slight increase every month, and a 4% increase year over year is good news.
Yeah, but Jane, the Fed and some traders don't want to see it too hot, thinking that that can contribute to inflation. It really is kind of a hard line to thread. You want workers making more money, but if they have too much money in their pockets, the theory is they spend more money. That keeps the economy hot. That keeps interest rates high. I don't know if you subscribe to that, but at least acknowledge, I'm sure you, as you do, it's a hard needle to thread.
It is a hard needle to thread. And you know, John, what you brought up before, it's really hard for all of us who weren't economics majors to understand what all these numbers mean. The stock market's going up. This is going up. How come I still can't make ends meet in my house? So it is really complicated. And certainly we'd like those interest rates to go down. You know, I'm sure you saw and probably held your breath the same way I did, that we're at an all-time high for people who have maxed out their credit cards. Well, when I was 22 and maxed out my credit cards, there wasn't a 26% interest rate.
Right.
I don't know how people get their balance down in this day and age.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only, really, the saving grace of the consumer is this jobs number. These jobs we keep on hiring, and the unemployment rate has remained very low, historically speaking, over a long span of time. We'll count our blessings there. Any last thoughts before I let you go, Jane?
Just aren't we both thankful for the resilience of the American people and
Amen.
So thrilled that we're here. Amen. Right. Thank you, John, so much. And thanks to all your listeners, especially for their good questions and comments.
WorkingNation.com. We'll do it again soon, Jane, okay?
Thanks, John.
Look forward here to John Curran. He's the Senior VP GM of Big Bus Tours. Everything we're about to say, you can find more information about it at bigbustours.com. John, good to have you on the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Glad to be here. Yeah, for sure. Give us a little roundup of what you guys do. I mean, it's in the name, Big Bus Tours. I think I've got a clue.
I think that's a good guess. We operate the double-decker sightseeing buses that you see downtown with the open tops. It's a wonderful way to get around the city and see all of the things to see and do with the wind in your hair and the sun on your face.
Is tourism alive and strong in Chicago right now?
Boy, it really is. We just celebrated through Chicago, RCVB's annual meeting this week, and the numbers that they put forth, not only for the numbers we've achieved for tourism, but what they think will happen over the next couple of years, very encouraging. So we're back full strength and really putting ourselves out there for the world to come and visit Chicago.
Is there any trend of where people are coming from that come to Chicago and then hop on one of your buses?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, our buses seem to attract a lot more international travelers than other businesses do in Chicago. I don't know why. I could guess as to why that is. We operate in 26 cities around the world. So I think people know our brand and know what the double-decker bus experience is to get on the bus and discover, kind of get the lay of the land on your first day of your visit, see where everything is, and then you can hop off and explore the things that you want to do over the rest of your visit. So I think international travelers lean on us. This summer, I think we're going to see a lot more domestic travelers. I really do. I think the last two summers, we've seen just a ton of Americans headed over to Europe. And this year, the indications for the last few months are that people are staying closer to home.
You kind of teased it there about what's a great way to discover a new city, whether it's another city or our city, is on that first day, just sit on top of the bus and let it go, and you kind of get the lay of the land.
It's, you know, and I'm a believer in that. I've always done that in my life. End up in a new city, and that's the first thing you do, especially if you want to reset your clock. If you're traveling internationally, for example, you know, you're a little out of whack on that first day when you land. It's a nice opportunity to kind of see where things are.
Yeah, for sure. I did one in Philadelphia in January. I think it was one of your buses, I think. Are you guys there?
Yeah, we are in Philadelphia. Good operation there.
Okay, let's talk about here in Chicago. You know, a couple of years ago we did a staycation and we acted like tourists for the day. It was wonderful. Okay. We didn't do a bus tour, but I love this Sunset Live tour idea. That could be something that a lot of Chicagoans could take advantage of.
Well, that's kind of the track we've taken. I think people... We're heavily invested in the tourism market with the hop on hop off product. We do 11 stops around the city and take you to all the museums and things you want to do. And those tickets are 24 and 48 hour experiences. And so if you're on vacation, that's a good thing. If you're having a long weekend in the city, that's a good thing. We created the Sunset Tour truly for Chicagoans and people in the region, because it is absolutely extraordinary to see our city in the golden hour. And it's almost like two tours, because it's light when you begin and we take you up through the Gold Coast. You see Rush Street and the vibrancy of that. You go into the old homes on the Gold Coast, the Playboy Mansion. You'll see the last remaining wooden street in Chicago, which is right near the Cardinal's House, near North Avenue there. And then we get up in the Lincoln Park and take you through by the zoo. We stop at Fullerton, and there's this moment where the bus stops on this live guided sunset tour, and you look back at the city over the lagoon, and you have the Drake Hotel and the Palmolive Building and the Hancock Building, and it is the most picturesque view of the city. And then we head back down into the city, and by that time it's getting a little darker. You start to see the marquees light up on Randolph Street with the Niederlander Theater, the Cadillac Palace. You make the turn and see LaSalle Street and the beautiful Financial Canyon with the Board of Trade at the end of the street. It just calls to Chicagoans in a beautiful way. Every time I go on it, I take so many pictures, and people send me photos because it is really a picturesque tour. Been very successful for us.
Not to mention at a cooler part of the day in the summer, right?
Right, that's true. And the live guide experience is great because we're using considered CTPA professional guides, certified tour professional guides, which is a wonderful designation. And these guides really know their stuff about Chicago, but they deliver it in a very friendly way. Lots of ability to ask questions and just engage on the tour.
Yeah, that sounds interesting too. Do most of your buses have a guide just for like the normal everyday ones?
Actually, most of the buses in the world have a recorded audio commentary. So that's been an interesting shift over the last decade or so around the world. Our daytime buses have a recorded audio commentary for the hop on hop off tour. And then we use the live guide experience at night for the sunset tour. The benefit of the recorded commentary is it's factual. Gone are the days of hiring the college kid and putting him up there and having him give a tour. And maybe those facts don't exactly jive with the phone in your hand. Can't do that anymore. So that's the benefit of the recorded audio, but having good quality tour guides will never go out of style.
Yeah. One summer down at the University of Illinois, I was an orientation leader back in the day when you and your kid went down for orientation for a day, stayed overnight. And I did 4 weeks on one of the buses offering my little quips about the, they were terrible jokes. I'd be like, look to the right and you'll see the largest permanent dormitory at the University of Illinois. And of course it was a cemetery. Ha 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 ha. Ooh. Laughter ensued. And that was my trademark. So that's a long way to say
you and I would get along fine.
Yeah. Okay. if you need someone last minute, I'm off my show at 7 o'clock. If you need me really quickly, give us the who, what, where, when, how, why.
We sunset tours begin at 7:30 p.m. Until about August 11th. We dial it back as the sun begins to set a little earlier. But right now, running 7:30 p.m. It's offered at the Hard Rock Cafe stop at Clark in Ontario. Tickets are available at bigbustours.com or bigbus.com. And tickets start at $49.50 for adults and $35 for children. It's a great value and a great way to see the city.
Love that. My show ends at 7. That's perfect timing. I'll pop on over. And if you never need someone on the mic, John, here I am.
Gotcha.
Okay, John, take care. All right.
Thanks a bunch.
Collective groan from everyone. They don't want to hear me on that bus. Trust me. Okay. I do want to hear from Steve Grzanich. He's got the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The 2024 Fortune 500 list is out, and Chicago's added two more big companies to the list of local heavy hitters. The city is home to 15 companies on the Fortune 500, up from 13 last year. Chicago ranks third for the most Fortune 500 companies after New York City with 41 and Houston with 21. Atlanta was third last year. The two new companies this year are GE Healthcare and Kellanova, the spinoff of Kellogg. The greater Chicago area has 31 Fortune 500 companies, down from 32 last year. The biggest company on the list is Walgreens Boots Alliance. A condo development is planned for the former site of a CVS pharmacy in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood. According to Cranes, developers are planning a new condo building at the corner where Armitage, Lincoln, and Sedgwick meet. The condos will be priced in the $2 million range. The four-story building will have commercial tenants on the first floor, indoor parking, and 6 or 8 condo units on the upper floors. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, let's say a happy Friday and the business of food from Steve Alexander.
Mm-hmm, thank you. And on this National Donut Day, it's also a Mr. Fizz Friday. Gardening guru Jim Fizzell will be talking about hunting wabbits and squirrels after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Steve. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the garden right now. Cicadas, they seem to be at about their peak right now. They're really singing, and it's a joy. A lot of chirping going on. They're having fun out there. They're flying around. We have little kids that are collecting them. It's a wonderful time, and these little kids, it's hard to believe. The next time this happens, they'll be out of college.
And how much longer will the cicadas be around, Jim?
Probably a couple of weeks, I would think, and they'll be pretty well gone. And, of course, there are lots of other bugs out right now. Bugs, I'll put in parentheses, because they're things that aren't really bugs, like slugs. They feed on things like marigolds and lettuce and stuff that has a little bitterness to it. The way to handle that is to get slug bait and just scatter these granules around, not in the plants, but next to the plants. so that you'll draw these little slugs back out, and they'll feed on those, go to sleep, and they won't get into your plants. Rabbits, the little rabbits, the baby rabbits just coming out of the nest seem to be peculiar in that they'll eat things that the adults will never eat. They feed on things like tomato plants after you've started them. Impatiens, they like to feed on the impatiens flowers. But I'm not real sure what to do about that except fence. That's about the only way you can keep rabbits off. Put a fence around those plants that are being bothered.
Or you could try this.
Shh. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting wabbits.
Oh, Elmer, absolutely, if you can find him. But you'd have to have him run around fast to get to all the places where these critters are. And then we have squirrels digging in the gardens. They just dig up plants for the heck of it, I think. Now, the only way to handle them is to use these have-a-heart traps and transport them somewhere away. Have-a-heart traps with peanut butter were just great on that.
Jim Fizell, our gardening guru, Mr. Fizz. On the food calendar, not only is it National Donut Day, it is National Chocolate Ice Cream Day. Yes. And yes, I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk about something that has taken over State Street a couple times over the past couple years and coming back on Father's Day. I love this. From Chicago Loop Alliance, Ariella Gibson, excuse me, telling us all about Sundays on State. Ariella, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And for those that didn't get to experience it, it really is something. I'm so glad you guys are doing this again. Explain what it's all about.
Yeah, so Sundays on State is an interactive block party full of a ton of different surprises, acting for recreation, shopping from major retailers like Macy's and Target to small mom and pop or local businesses from across the Chicagoland area, over 30 food and drink vendors, just a little something for everybody. And it closes State Street from Lake to Adams for two Sundays.
Two Sundays, and which ones are they?
Yeah, so coming up Father's Day, June 16th. And then our next one will be Sunday, July 14th. So two times to experience it. My personal favorite may be Father's Day, just because it's so unique. But bring the whole family out either day.
I love the, it seems so simple, closing a street. You walk on it, you do things. There's something about State Street being closed and being turned into a pedestrian walkway that in and of itself is a reason to kind of make the trip.
Exactly. Like, who can imagine something so unique and so one of a kind as closing State Street? It's a major thoroughfare. It's massively wide. It's like an expanse. You usually can't imagine being closed to vehicular traffic, and it just transforms this potentially overwhelming space into something kind of cozy, if you can imagine that in a way. Yeah, it's really great.
What are some of the activations happening?
So on Sunday, June 16th, we'll have a performance or a speech from Sherman Dilla Thomas, the Chicago historian.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of performances from K-pop band Chemical X on the main stage, soul musician Gerald McClendon, some interactive experiences from Cabinet of Curiosity, Paint the City, Divi will be there. The new experience at Navy Pier Flyover will be on State Street. So a lot of really cool, unique things that you can't typically see on State Street will be available.
Are the food and drink vendors like from around the downtown area, or are they from all over the communities able to kind of come into this one event?
That's such a great question. So it's a little bit of both. We have iconic Loop restaurants like Berghoff and Italian Village and Macy's Walnut Room that'll be on the street. But we also have small Black-owned businesses like Hare's Golf Shrimp from the South Side or Cynthia's Gumbo and other things in between like Olga's Aguas Frescas. So a very wide range of ethnic food groups, different types of American and Chicago classic food. So delicious experiences.
Those diverse, eclectic experiences, just unique or places that maybe you never visited the brick and mortar. That's huge for these businesses to be able to show off their talents and hopefully then translate to people visiting other parts of the city that maybe they don't go to very often.
Exactly. And that's the intention of Sundays on State. We want this to be an experience for people across Chicago, across the state and the world. Honestly, we get a wide variety of attendees from different countries and states. And the goal of Sundays on State is to unite the community, but also encourage people to experience their community in their own neighborhoods and in different neighborhoods. We call the Loop Everyone's Neighborhood, and we want it to be that because we have underrepresented businesses from any demographic area and any Chicago community area calling the Loop and State Street home, even if it's for just 2 Sundays a year.
And I think State Street is like the perfect place to kind of meld together both sides of the city. After all, State and Madison is 0-0, and just so perfectly, it goes from Adams to Lake, 200 South to 200 North. I don't know if that was done intentionally, but it makes sense to me.
It makes sense to us, too. It was never the intention to be so specific like that, but we did always have this very strong goal of making sure the center of the city, like you said, Madison and State has always been a part of our footprint, is representative of the entire city of Chicago. And it's heartwarming and unique, and it just really speaks to the soul of Chicago.
Is part of the goal here, okay, you visit State Street, maybe you're exposed to some businesses you don't go to before, but hey, also look at the shops on State Street. Remember, we're here. Get off. Don't only order on Amazon. Make sure you're still patronizing our local businesses here.
Yes, 1,000%. And there is something unique and something that you just can't grasp from e-commerce or online shopping or picking up while you do a drive-in order. Like, you have, sometimes you just have to go in and feel things and be with people and meet new experiences and new perspectives. And State Street is a great place for that. Whether you're going in the shops, going in the restaurants, going to the theater, we are just such a mecca of all industries and sectors that it's a vital place for people to be and experience.
Ariella, you're the Director of Marketing and Communications, so I know you have to pump up what is happening downtown and the Loop Alliance. There are a lot of good things, and maybe the perceptions out there are different from some people. How is the Loop doing? How are these businesses doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we recently released our Q1 State of the Loop report, and pedestrian activity in the Loop itself is on State Street is exceeding 2019 levels in often many cases on the weekends, especially over the week. We're also extremely close to 2019 levels, within 5 to 10% on an average weekly basis. So people are here. They want to be in the Loop. They want to be on State Street. And we are excited about that perspective, that potential, that energy. Businesses themselves are also saying that they are seeing an increase in activity and a drive to make their hours more reflective of the capacity of our district, which is changing. It's a shift in, you know, the very strict Monday to Friday, 9 to 5
right,
influx of people. But we are seeing this wider range of people and activity and pace that goes into later in the evening or goes through the weekend. And that's exciting to me, and I think a lot of people at Chicago Loop Alliance and within our community.
The first Sunday on State, June 16th. And for more information on what you all do, loopchicago.com. Ariella, appreciate your time, okay?
Thank you.